Good morning. I'm going to start the presentation off with the first 3 years of the study, and then Dr. Olvera is going to finish the presentation for me. We studied the Health and Environment Action Network. We studied hotspots and air quality pollution in four different communities nationwide. So I have no presenter disclosures. To start out, just some brief information about the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. Our mission is to improve the health of Hispanic communities and work with others to improve the health for all. We are one of the largest and oldest Hispanic networks in the U.S., and we have approximately 15 million members. And we're big believers in community-based solutions, and we also don't accept any funding from alcohol or tobacco companies. The Alliance was really interested in studying the health impacts of air pollution in the Hispanic community. So, as you all know, air pollutants have been associated with increasing respiratory tract illnesses and asthma, and also decreased lung function. Additionally, air pollution has led to respiratory and cardiovascular hospitalizations, and also lung cancer, and also children are especially at risk with respiratory complications, especially in areas with high traffic density. So, nationwide, people are really dealing with the effects of this pollution, and also Hispanics are particularly affected. Approximately 70% of Hispanics live in areas that do not meet quality standards for at least one pollutant, and about one in five Puerto Rican children have asthma. And also, I found it interesting that almost 25% of Hispanics don't believe that their water is safe to drink, compared to almost 10% of the general population. So with this in mind, the Alliance, and also with funding from the Kellogg Foundation, created the HEAN program, and it's a nationally and locally driven program committed to making sure that people have clean air and clean water. And we were really interested in identifying environmental and health impacts, and also mobilizing the community to address these issues. And obviously, this is very broad, so we are really interested in pollution around school zones and children, and also accessibility to green spaces and environments. So because of this, this created the pollution-free school zones and also the Walk to Green Spaces initiatives. We partnered with four different community-based organizations. The first one is Salud para la Gente in Watsonville, California. We were interested in working with them. It's a big strawberry agricultural community, and there were a lot of concerns about pesticide exposure. The second community was in Brownsville, Texas. We worked with Brownsville Community Health Center, and that's a big border community, and there was a lot of concern about border traffic. Another border community was in Detroit, Michigan, with CHAZ, the Community Health and Social Services Center. The organization is within 2 miles of the Ambassador Bridge, which is a major crossing. There's a lot of diesel traffic, and also a lot of diesel trucks actually idle in the neighborhood, which was a big concern. And then the final organization was Hispanic Federation, and they worked in partnership with UPROSE, which was the United Puerto Rican Organization of Sunset Park, and that's a major urban area. There's a lot of traffic coming in and out of Manhattan, and there's also a real lack of green space. In the community, the only major green space was a cemetery. It was private, and people didn't have access to it. So with that in mind, there are three main components of the HEAN program. There are education, advocacy, and research, and I'm going to be really focusing on the first 3 years. In terms of education, the different community-based organizations organize youth camps and summer camps, teaching them about environmental impacts and also how to take measurements in their community. So if you take a look at the picture on the left, they're doing a skit, and then also on the bottom left, they're actually taking air pollution measurements. We also created educational videos for the community that were really great. We had a video of students testing the water quality, and that was shown in the different schools as well. We had a promotora outreach program, which are basically health workers, and they went out within the CBOs and in the community to inform them about different environmental risks and their possible impacts. And then we also developed bilingual materials because these are Hispanic communities. We wanted to make sure that they had access to information in both English and Spanish. And working in partnership with the education component was also advocacy. The organization in New York attended the Somos el Futuro, We Are the Future conference, discussing the study and also the work that they were doing. They also worked with the New York government to create the Greenway Blueway project, trying to have more access to green space in their community, and they were actually successful. In Detroit, they're interested in creating a new private bridge, and they're trying to work with the government to see if they can have a government-owned bridge with higher traffic restrictions and also higher environmental standards. They also conducted toxic tours within the community, informing community members of potential risks and also informing them also of steps that they can take. And then also they worked with their governments to try to have access to environmentally friendly transportation. So in the middle we have a picture of some of the children who worked in the HEME project, and it was a great piece that was put in magazine showing them doing air quality testing. And then the final component was research. During the first 3 years of the program, we really did focus on education and advocacy more than on research. But we did do air pollution testing, and we did do water monitoring, and we studied nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide and carbon monoxide. And in the water testing, it was at local schools. And I'm going to pass it actually over to Dr. Olvera now to discuss the research that we wanted to focus on during the fourth year, because, like I said, we primarily focus on advocacy and education during the first 3 years, and we really want to put an emphasis on that in the final year. So, pass it over.
Well, in terms of research, it was the goals were different than a typical research study. They were mostly driven in terms of training the community into performing their own research and the research methods, the scientific method, and giving them the capacity through the HEME project, equipment was bought that they actually kept. So the goal was to empower them with research and scientific tools to use that equipment in their behalf. So the objective was actually beyond actual research, although the training was done through a small research project. So I'm going to try to comment on the next couple slides on those two kind of objectives that were dual to the goals of the project. First of all, we use this. I'm going to speak mostly about the air quality measurements. Now we have these four communities, and they're very different. They're actually, if you saw where they were, they're actually apart, right? There's Detroit, Brooklyn, Bronzeville, and Watsonville. So we actually have covered almost every corner of the United States. They're actually very different communities demographic-wise. Bronzeville is Hispanic, but mostly Mexican. Uprose is Puerto Rican in New York, and then Watsonville, and it's most mixture, and Detroit is also, that at least the community we work with was highly Mexican descendant. And then, of course, Brownsville and Detroit have the common impact from the border crossings, which was also very interesting. So the goal was to help them use the equipment and train them on how to use it, and train them on a protocol on how to find air quality hotspots within their communities. The other goal of the project was to help them survey the land use characteristics of their urban morphology, of their city environment, and try to link what they were measuring to what was the land use, meaning what are the basically to answer the question, what are these pollution levels related to? So the equipment actually lended itself mostly for acute exposure assessment, meaning for high time resolution measurements. These instruments are actually designed for occupational health hazard monitoring. So they're very good at monitoring quick responses, real time, short interval responses. They're less capable for long term continuous monitoring. So they were actually, they lended themselves very good for the objectives of the project. So that's where the four communities are located, and it will be somewhat relevant regarding the results. So the protocol that we prepared for them was to do a set of runs, and the first thing that the community was that they decided to do, the restriction was for them that we placed on them was, you need to find a hotspot, but you live there, so you know the community better than us. So, and this was the objective from our perspective of the study, meaning to actually leave some of the decisions of the research to them. So what the first thing we shared with them, or we asked them to do, was you're going to have the community needed to do a run, a set of runs, or surveys that we call them, with their equipment in their community that consisted of walking. We chose an elementary school within each of the communities, and they were going to define routes to monitor every day for 2 weeks. And the only conditions that we placed is that the routes were going to start at the school site, and they were going to end at that school site. And they were going to, they have to pass through residential areas, they would have to pass through high traffic areas, and then I think there was and a park area within their community, and then walk back. And they were going to, because the instruments had GPS, we could actually track where they were, and they would identify where they were at a certain time, so we have logs of where they were. So we were basically trying to hunt down hotspots, but they were defining those routes where they thought those hotspots were going to be. And within the route, they were going through residential areas and park areas to kind of have a control for each of the routes. But again, they were defining where the routes were and where they thought the hotspots were going to be. That happened last year. For a couple of months, they actually went and did those routes, and they got the opportunity. The HIN project allowed them actually this very nice set of tools where they could upload the data with GPS information in it, and they could quickly map this in Google Earth. And actually, the community, this is the output they got. They actually got the output on a Google Earth map, and they could actually see their route, and they could actually plot their measurements on the Google Earth. So it was actually a nice set of equipment that they actually kept, and actually at least UpRose is still using for the same purposes, and I'll mention that a little later about that. So this is the equipment. I'm not going to go too much into this. This is actually, as I mentioned, for occupational health hazard, and it does a really nice job at measuring each of those pollutants. I can give you more references about the equipment if you like after the talk. So this is, for instance, one of the plots that we're actually measuring, and they were getting at output. So they could actually see the levels for each of the pollutants, and they would see the map, and they could actually zoom into this trail and see the levels they measure at each of those points. And that's how they actually correlated what they were measuring with their log and what the results were. So they could find where within their communities the highest levels were occurring. At each of those sites, I don't know if you can see the symbols there. There's a school, there's a traffic site, there's the park site, and then there's the residential area. They chose for those 4 points to stop there for 10 minutes within the route. So they were walking, and then they were stopping somewhere within a residential area for 10 minutes, somewhere at a high traffic area, corner or something like that, or near a highway, and they were taking their measurements. So we had in transit measurements, and then measurements at each of those sites. This is kind of a summary of what was measured, and this was basically just to compare among the sites, and this was mostly for our curiosity, and then I'll mention the next slide talks a little bit more detail about what they actually found, which was relevant to them. I was particularly intrigued by the PM 2.5 levels that were actually very high at moments. Keep in mind, these are 10-minute averages, so they tend to be a little higher, especially they were walking next to streets or trafficated areas, and they're short-term measurements, so the spikes are high. But still, the levels are considerable. One thing that I did ask them not to do was to move the monitor. This was a handheld monitor, and place it like near the tailpipe of traffic, or meaning to purposely try to find a spike. They were actually asked, and we actually trained them actually here in D.C. last year, to keep the monitor at a breathing height, and they were actually walking on the sidewalk, all of them, and keeping that. At the school sites, they were near the entry doors for either the house or the school sites. So there were some control for where the pollution was, what the measurements were taken for all the sites. But again, PM 2.5 seemed to be high, and NO2 as well. Both of them are good indicators of vehicle emissions, which is kind of what I was expecting to see in most of the sites. This is what I thought it was more interesting, and this is actually something something that happened for my own interest after working with the HEAN network and the data that they were collecting. I have written two proposals to look at some of the air pollution back at home at some of the school sites. Something that I found very interesting is, as you can see from that table, is that most of the highest levels occur at the school sites. And the measurements were taken in the morning peak hours and in the afternoon peak hours. The morning peak hours, they coincide with the drop-off of children at schools. The afternoon did not. They were mostly between 4 and 5 by then. The kids had been picked up. And even under those circumstances, most of the highest levels of pollution measured for almost every route were at the school site. And this is somewhat circumstantial. Again, this is only one site per community, and those communities, by design, they were already within highly polluted areas within those cities. So the schools were very near highways. For instance, the school in Detroit was the queue for the commercial traffic, heavy duty diesel vehicles going into Canada, was right outside the school. In Brownsville, the border, the port of entry, was within a mile and a half from the school. But still, from the measurements and observing at the time series of the data, the morning peaks were very high at all of the schools. And what was very interesting is that the drop-off conditions at every school were actually creating the hotspot. And I think in most of the cases, the highest polluted PM 2.5 measurements occur in the morning during the drop-off at each of the schools. So this was pollution created by the school circumstances that was creating those hotspots. Now, again, this is only during the drop-off hour, so it's only maybe for half an hour, but that circumstance were there. So two things important, two key observations came out. First of all, was the location of schools that were, in some cases, to be considered. And I guess this goes into that pollution-free school zone initiatives that came out of this type of work, where two things are affecting. Site location for schools is very important. In El Paso, for instance, there's a school within 300 meters of a port of entry, and the pollution levels of vehicle-related emissions are considerably high. And the same thing for Detroit, and maybe also for, it could be seen like that for Brownsville. The other thing is the policy on drop-off traffic. It should maybe that's something that in terms of policy could also be looked into. So something important that we learned is that the community is actually very effective at doing their part. They were very consistent. They were I was actually surprised because we were doing this. I was based in El Paso, and the committee was everywhere, and I was receiving data every day from what they were doing. And I was surprised the response and the commitment from the community. And this opened up the possibility to think about projects made it better defined, where the community could really be a part of asking the question, collecting the data, and producing the results. They were very capable of doing that, and I think this actually helps in terms of translational research. And this is a key word right now in NIH, and I can see this also working for public health and environmental health studies, where the community could be part of the whole research development process, and they could actually, in that regard, the results of the studies can more quickly be adapted by the community if they're part of all of this. So I think that's one of the key learning things that we gain from this project, that we could maybe think about doing more projects where the community is more involved, and this kind of shows their capacity in doing that. Again, the policy in terms of how our schools are cited, I think it's key. And then, of course, there were the CHAS in Detroit and the Bronzeville communities had very high levels of PM2.5s, and they were mostly related to ports of entry. And knowing that diesel emitted particles are likely carcinogens, again, these are school sightings that we should be very concerned with. So maybe, again, in terms from a policy perspective, especially now if the communities are driving these research questions, maybe we can push forward at least a more serious look into this set of circumstances. One last thing I wanted to comment, actually UPROSE, they used the protocol, they kept the instruments, and they wrote another proposal to EPA, and which I guess was something that I was very amazed, and again proves the capacity of the community to do this work themselves, and they actually got it funded, and they're actually working on doing this in a more length and more detailed way, and they gained this out of this project. So I think it was a big success, especially for them. So again, in terms of actual research, something that I'm very concerned from what we saw, it's the multi-level, maybe sort of public health epidemiological studies, where we need to really see how much the exposure at schools it's affecting either some sort of health concern with the children. So because again, we don't know if that hour during the drop-off, we don't know if that if the proximity to ports of entry, how does that really play out when you kind of factor out the other exposures either at home or during in the neighborhood. So I guess to look at more detail, what are the effects of exposures occurring at school specifically need to be looked into in a more detailed way to really see if these policy concerns are sustained by actual research. So I think that's where I want to move forward with in regards of what I learned from this project. I think that's it.